I am glad to be with you. It just continues to be a gift for me and my family to be with y'all. And thank you especially for switching around your day so that we can have some more time together this evening. I'm sorry this is the weather, but Owen used a phrase with me earlier called microclimates, which made me think I still have a lot to learn about living in the mountains. Just have to tell you, valleys being filled in, mountains being toppled over, God does not have any kind of bias against the mountains, so that's not what's going on there. But it's a gift to be with y'all. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Michael, and if you're new, then you're in at least halfway decent company. I am also new, so I look forward to meeting you. Let me say a prayer for us before we dive fully into our scriptures today. Lord, we invite your spirit to be at work in each one of our hearts. We know that you are powerful and active. And so I pray that the words of my mouth and the meditations of all your people's hearts would be pleasing and acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, we are in the second week of Advent here at the Vine. And this is a season of four Sundays leading up to Christmas where we prepare ourselves for the coming of Jesus. This is what my kids told me earlier today they are most longing for when I asked them that question, Christmas. Each liturgical season here is going to be supported by different colors, different themes, certain kinds of songs. You might have noticed we started out on a minor key kind of song. And we support these different themes because they're meaningful to us. They shape us in meaningful ways as we walk through the story of Jesus over the year. And as we meet Jesus in different places in his story with the different places we're in our stories. So this season we have the color purple here. It's a penitential color because we are preparing. We're preparing the way for Christ to come into our own hearts. Advent themes include finding light in the darkness, sustaining hope in the midst of waiting and longing. So this is the season we're in. This is why we also get a heavy dose of the Old Testament prophets in Advent, because we're invited to connect with the Old Testament longing for a Messiah that was foreseen and yet to be realized. And we can connect with the New Testament hope for Jesus to return again and to make all things new, to heal everything, to make everything whole in an instant. And in doing these things, we're invited to connect with our own personal longings, with our own hearts, which God cares deeply about. So, a question for you. What do you come here this evening longing for? I want you to hold that in the back of your minds as we spend some time together this evening. Are you longing for a relationship to be easy again? Are you longing for a war to cease, for things to be clearer for you than they are right now, or for a renewed sense that God is actually at work in your heart, or maybe that he's actually there at all? What are you longing for? Advent pulls on these heartstrings. And so this is why a theme like the wilderness is so powerful during this time. Last week, Pastor Owen beautifully set three tables in the wilderness for us, the tables of the church, Jesus, and us. So if you didn't get to hear it, I recommend you go back and listen. And we're going to continue the theme of the wilderness today, because God's people were used to setting tables in the wilderness. This is perhaps the longest standing theme of Israel's history. I can't help but think of their longing to be freed from slavery in Egypt so many years ago. God powerfully answered their longing, and yet he drove them right into 40 years in the wilderness. 40 years in the wilderness. Physically challenging, sure, and spiritually disorienting. This whole following God thing had to have been harder than they thought it would be. I'll tell you a little bit of my own story. When I engaged in a relationship with Jesus in a meaningful way for the first time, it was initially exciting and powerful. It changed a lot. It felt very life-giving for me. But soon I felt myself plunged into my own kind of wilderness. So this was in my last year of college, and all of a sudden I felt called away from the musical career that I had spent 4 years studying for. What was I called to? I did not yet know. Many of the friendships that I had made throughout college, they were still there, but they were growing in distance, mostly because I wasn't doing the same kind of partying or going to the same kind of gatherings that I had been. Also, the girl who piqued my initial re-engagement with Jesus and who I badly wanted to date dumped me. Now, she would wind up becoming my wife a couple years later, but that's a whole other story. I thought this whole following Jesus thing was going to be a lot easier. I'd say to myself, "You're God, right? Can't you fix all of these things?" I was utterly confused. I was disenchanted. And I honestly didn't know which way to go. I was in the first wilderness of my faith pretty quickly, and I couldn't see the way forward. Now, I wonder how many of us come to church this evening in the midst of a wilderness. I bet it's more than we might think. I know Jesus says to expect challenges along the way of following him, but why does it seem like so often he sends us into a wilderness? In these hard, unpredictable, inhospitable, disorienting seasons, what does the life of faith in Jesus look like? Today we're going to learn from somebody who knows a thing or two about life in the wilderness, the prophet Isaiah, who is a voice crying out, shouting in the wilderness. And what he says teaches us some about the nature of the wilderness, why we might find ourselves there, but I think more importantly, how to respond. What is God's invitation to us in wilderness seasons? So this is where we're headed. First thing we have to understand is Israel's wilderness that they find themselves in. I love the first words of our reading. They're perhaps the most famous words in the book of Isaiah, debatable, but I like them. "Comfort, comfort my people," says your God. These words beg the question, why do they need comforting? So these words come at the beginning of chapter 40, what's been going on before chapter 40. In brief, chapters 1 through 39 represent Isaiah's prophetic ministry to God's people over generations, over decades, over multiple kings. This was a ministry that began, he began preaching to a quite successful nation of Judah. They were prosperous, they were successful. Trade was good, storehouses were full, and the nations thought well of this fledgling country. But underneath, there was a lot of dysfunction. They were worshiping other gods so that other nations would like them. I don't know if you can connect to that feeling of doing something so that others will like you, but they're doing it. They weren't taking care of the marginalized in their society, which is especially important to the Lord. Isaiah was led to lead them, to warn them, and to give a message of hope along with every warning along the way. He warned them that this would lead to a crumbling society, but the leaders did not listen. This had gotten so bad by the end of chapter 39, right before our passage, that Isaiah foresees the utter destruction of Judah and the temple and its people and treasures being exiled into Babylon decades down the road. So this brings us to intermission in the book of Isaiah. Right between chapter 39 and chapter 40, there's a pause, and about 200 years pass. Scholars widely agree that starting in chapter 40, we are reading from the perspective of decades down the road after God's people had already been defeated and brought to live in another nation. This latter part of Isaiah is likely the scroll that he wrote earlier. He talks about this in chapter 8, and that he sealed up for reading in future generations. Future generations when these things would have come to pass, and God's people might have new ears to hear his words and his warnings. Why is this so important for us? It tells us that sometimes it takes a wilderness for us to hear what God is saying to us. I think of St. Ignatius of Loyola. He was a 16th century wealthy Spanish nobleman turned priest who is famous for his spiritual disciplines. One that's often used today is called the examen, where we listen for the voice of God as we set aside time to prayerfully reflect on our day. It's earthy, right? It's day-to-day spirituality, and I love it. Before his conversion, he lived luxuriously. He sought glory through victory on the battlefield, and he loved romance novels, which I just think is fun to know about him. In one battle, he was really badly injured, and he was bedbound for months afterwards after a major surgery. And while he was in his bed, he initially asked for his favorite romance novels. Again, fun to know. But the only book that was available to him was The Lives of Christ and of the Saints. These stories drove him to trust in Jesus and to choose a life that many would have called a wilderness. He gave away the wealth that he had and lived in poverty so that he could perhaps better hear God's voice and his invitation to him without the trappings of wealth around him. God picked up on his unique connection with the things of the heart, right? Romance novels, he loved them. He picked up on this natural disposition of his to develop these spiritual exercises, these disciplines that have blessed generations of Christians afterwards who are longing to understand how our feelings and our emotions are an integral part of faith. God was speaking to Ignatius of Loyola. Through the wilderness of being bedbound, he chose a physical wilderness so that he could more clearly hear God's voice. In my own story, I did not choose a wilderness, but I found myself there nonetheless. I was untethered from friends, from my future. I was untethered from romance. I found myself pretty unhappy with God. After all, I had made some serious concessions to God. I'd made some serious commitments to God. But through my brutal voicing of anger and disappointment, which I don't think is a bad thing, but it was brutal, God spoke to me. And this is one of the clearest times I remember sensing God's voice. He said something like, without the job, without the friends, without the girl, or whatever else you might have thought this would look like, are you still in? I had backed into the truth that sometimes it takes a wilderness to hear what God has been saying. The wilderness. It is more a reality of the heart than of our physical circumstances. Yes, God's people had in fact lost the homeland that God gave them. The temple where they drew near to God's presence had been destroyed. And yes, they were overruled by a foreign power. But theirs was a wilderness of the heart that long existed before their destruction. They had forgotten the God who so cared for them, who so loves them, and they were utterly disoriented. So, question for you. Recall the last time that you felt this kind of depth of disorientation. Maybe that's right now. Maybe it's not hard for you. How did you experience God? Now, I'm used to asking these questions rhetorically, but I know this is an engaging congregation here. So maybe just take 30 seconds here. Call out one or two words around the room. When you've been in a disorienting season, what's one word to describe how you experienced God?
Sometimes empathetic.
Empathetic. Yeah. Thank you. Patient. Ever present. Yeah. Maybe one more.
Unchanging.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your honesty in that. God had always been speaking to his people. And he is always speaking to us. What is he saying? Something specific to each one of you, yes. But as we pick up the story of God's people in exile this evening, we can hear his invitation to everyone who finds themselves lost in the wilderness. So let's make three observations from our Isaiah text this evening. And for you type A note takers, I'll give you the three things I've observed up front. We're invited to receive comfort, to receive the wilderness, and to receive the waymaker. So receiving comfort. It's easy to see how we get this from our Isaiah reading, but let's not rush over it. I think we can rush over receiving God's comfort so often. Look at the depth of care that is God's comfort for us. Let these words wash over you. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is ended, that her iniquity is pardoned. So about God's comfort, firstly, notice his tenderness. He invites this brash prophet to speak tender words, comforting words to a hurting people. God had every right to be angry with them. He gave them everything. He warned them consistently along the way when they were going down a bad path. And they rejected him for other gods. And let's not pretend like that kind of relational rejection doesn't hurt God just as much as it can hurt us. We find ourselves in a wilderness sometimes through our own choices, like God's people here. But sometimes we find ourselves there through no fault of our own. Either way, God responds tenderly to us. The end of our passage describes him as a shepherd, carrying us in his arms. Even the Hebrew word for comfort here contains the meaning of sorrow. Know that yours is not the only sorrow when you are in the wilderness. God sees you, and he knows your sorrow, and he feels your pain with you. Secondly, notice that God is providing physically in the midst of the wilderness. This is part of his comfort. It's no small thing that their warfare was over. This is God's way of saying, you can return home now. That's what he's communicating here. And in fact, God's people would return home by the hand of King Cyrus, a Persian king. And this would cause a man called Nehemiah to come up and lead the nation to rebuild the destroyed temple on Persia's dime. That's pretty good provision, I think. Now, we don't always get that kind of provision. But the comfort we receive is that there is no situation that is too big for God. There's no situation that's too thorny for him. No mistake that is so big that it boxes out God. It's okay to ask God to provide until he either does or you don't feel called to keep asking anymore. So how might you need God to provide for you right now? You can ask him. And God's comfort, yes, external provision, but God's comfort comes directly into the hearts of his people. This is at the core of his longing, a relationship with us involving our whole hearts. In any relationship, when someone's been wronged, it tends to create distance until it's repaired, right? As a parent, I feel like I'm constantly on a steep learning curve as I simply try to keep my head above water. We have three little ones, and one bit of encouraging intel that's widely accepted by psychiatrists and neuroscientists and all the ists out there is that when we get it wrong as parents, the most important thing is to go and repair, and that repair is at least 10 times more powerful than the thing that we got wrong. This is good news for a parent who is far from perfect. When I get it wrong with my kids, the repair is vastly more powerful than the break in the relationship. And this is the fabric of our relationship with God also, except that he always makes the first move towards repair when we cause the break in the relationship. He is constantly there, building the bridge back towards us, repairing the relationship with outstretched arms towards us if only we would grab onto them. This is our greatest comfort in the wilderness. So receive comfort. Second, receive the wilderness. Now, this might seem strange. If we are, in fact, in a wilderness, why would we have to then go and receive it? Well, look at God's people here again. For generations, they did not see clearly the extent of their heart's wilderness. They never really took stock of the thorny, overgrown situation they were in. They ignored the wilderness rather than receiving it. And getting that wrong was disastrous for them. And it can be for us today too. God's invitation is to receive the wilderness, but we so often try to ignore it. When we find ourselves in a wilderness, we often try to pretend like it's not there or it's not that bad. When the pressure inevitably builds from those attempts, we seek out ways to numb ourselves. Substances, relationships, entertainment, doom scrolling. Anybody? Middle of the night on your instant. Anyway, that's what doom scrolling is. We can even numb ourselves out with good things like getting over involved in church. We have all kinds of tools at our hands. Anything to take our minds off of the painful thing at hand. This rejects our call to receive the wilderness that we're in. It leaves it to fester. And functionally, it leaves God out of any sense of healing that we might get to experience. But with the comfort of knowing that we are not alone in these seasons, we are invited to intimately move towards the pains, the disappointments, the resentments, the regrets, the betrayals, all of these things that make up the desert that we find ourselves in. We move towards these things to grow in our understanding as we survey the landscape of our hearts in a trying season. Receive the wilderness. Even though we may have no idea where this exploration will go, this leads us into our last invitation, that we've received comfort, received the wilderness, and then we receive the waymaker who walks alongside of us as we survey the landscape. Now, I love the poetic image Isaiah uses. He begins in the wilderness and invites preparation for something new, for a level place, for freedom. Our passage says, "A voice cries, 'In the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. The uneven ground will become level, and the rough places a plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed.'" God wants nothing but the best for us. His glory shining in and through us. His kingship in our hearts, because it's a kingship of love and justice. And it's the good of an intimate relationship with him. But for this to happen, a way needs to be made for the king to enter in. Our hearts are oftentimes overgrown, and a path has to be made. It's a little bit like this. You may or may not know, the house that Hannah and I just bought has quite a steep slope on the back end of it. It had quite a lot of things in addition on that slope, like an old deck that was falling apart, an old pool that was there. Now, it's about half an acre of land totally, but it really wasn't very usable land, and walking around included a great deal of difficulty. Now, this was a sad reality for our kids when they first saw the house, because they loved to run around. They loved to explore freely outside. But a couple of guys who know what to do with spaces like these are putting in some serious work to make these rough places in our backyard plain. Don and Donnie, father and son, take large digs out of some areas and fill in others behind newly built walls. They use heavy machinery when necessary, and I have seen them almost intimately use a hammer and chisel in some parts of this wilderness that is my backyard. More and more, my backyard is becoming a place where my kids can run around freely rather than getting tangled up on a mountainside. It's a place of freedom. Can you imagine your wilderness becoming a place of freedom? Can you long to run around like a child in the places that you have felt stuck? I've had some of my own recently, and I know it's hard to imagine. But as we move towards these landscapes, we will find that the wilderness is changing. Why? Because the Lord for whom we are making a way in our very hearts is already ahead of us and at work. He is at work beside us. He is an expert way maker, chiseling intimately to bring healing and freedom to our thorny, overgrown hearts. Our passage says, he will tend his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs in his arms. This is our God, the waymaker, who cares too much for you to leave you in the wilderness. He points forward to our gospel text here, where the way is being made for Jesus now, our good shepherd, who lives within us now through the power of the Holy Spirit, to bring that same level ground out of rough spaces. He is constantly whispering to us day by day, moment by moment, for freedom where there once was a wilderness. If only we would invite that voice to speak. He is constantly with us, chipping away. Now, in my own story, I had already said a costly yes to Jesus. Yet because I found myself in a wilderness, my yes deepened. Was I truly following Christ on my own, or was I doing it for success, or was I doing it to get the girl? Suddenly, I thought the landscape around me was barren, and I found myself strangely able to utter some kind of a deeper yes. It's the kind of yes that I wasn't saying on my own. I had help from the Waymaker. It's a yes that God knew I would need and that has sustained me through peaks and valleys of a Christian walk. When we are in the wilderness, God invites us all to receive his comfort, to see our wilderness clearly, and trust the Waymaker's healing work to bring freedom. In closing, imagine how this could change not only us, but the world if we leaned into this calling. Imagine what it would be like if we all deliberately moved towards the things in our hearts that we've been most reluctant to receive. A broken relationship, an annoying personality trait, a part of your story, a pattern that needs to stop. What kind of freedom might we experience if we move towards our pain rather than running from it? God is there. We can trust him. He is already speaking comfort and working to bring clarity and freedom. And we are here, the church, to support one another as we walk this path together. Imagine the church was a level place in the wilderness of the world, where we root out the overgrown sins of the church with clear eyes, and there are many ways that the church gets it wrong. What if we move towards those places to create a level plane again, where we can move freely and the glory of the Lord might shine in and through the church again? This is the calling of the church, to be such a place as we continue to welcome more and more people who are lost in the wilderness. And imagine if the church could become a leveling agent beyond our walls, in a world where we are all exiles until Jesus returns again to make all things new. What if we began moving towards the pain of the world, chiseling away at the places where our world is stuck, broken, trapped in the wilderness? What if we brought the glory of the Lord into the world around us to heal it, not to cause greater division or hatred? What if the world were a more level place because of the church? This is what we're really invited into. We are exiles who are being brought home. We are between worlds. This is what Advent invites us into, that tension of being between worlds. As we sojourn in this world, we will find ourselves in the wilderness. I promise you that. The question is, when that time comes, will we trust in the Waymaker and his love for us?